Hello and welcome to the Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Greg Carlisle. Oh man, I love these shows. I love these opportunities to teach and to talk and to learn and to listen. And the learning I'm getting a lot with this is learning from God and what He has for me in my life and from really where I am. And I know I'm not the only one out there that's this way and feeling some kind of a way about some things and topics. And it's great for me to get into my study, get into the Word, and really find out what the Lord has for me. So I know if the Lord has something like this for me that I'm wrestling with, there's got to be other people out there. So, and again, if you're new to the show, that's one of the main core premises of the Raising Men Show, is that I wanted to make sure that I helped someone who was coming behind me who'd experienced a life tragedy or life issue like I did, and give them a guidepost, a road marker, a place, a point of reference to go from and go to. In the book I'm writing, Catch My Breath, Learning to Live Through Life's Letdowns, I use the analogy that the Lord gave me of a lighthouse, where a lighthouse is designed to be out on the edge of a city, the edge of a country, the edge of the shore, out where the ships can see. And it's got a light on the top of it, and the light is supposed to be so bright that you could see it from several miles away, to act like a marker or a beacon for those ships that may be lost at sea. Now, I get it. I totally understand that that's an old school analogy, because modern day, you know, sailing and modern day maritime doesn't use antiquated things like a lighthouse. But back in the day, when there was no such thing as GPS or cell phones or satellites, and the ship captains used to navigate using the stars in the sky at night, and then the sun, of course, by day, they needed points of reference as they were getting towards land. And were we safe enough? Are we coming towards the city or any city if we were lost during a storm? We lost our bearing. It gave hope. And so when I lost my wife almost 6 years ago, I felt in so many ways that I didn't have any hope. And it wasn't because there wasn't any person, place, or thing that was reaching out to be helpful and be hopeful. But in my situation, I was looking for someone who had been where I had been, or someone who has experienced what I was experiencing, and they could give me a point of reference that I could say, yeah, as I'm coming onto that shore, am I gonna be okay? So again, this is a situation where I'm trying to give people out there who may be listening from a variety of backgrounds, places, things, who know my story, who don't know my story, a place of reference, a place of hope. And again, this is one of those situations where you don't even have to know anything about me. If you tuned in, providentially, you're listening. So that becomes the measure of hope that you may have needed for your life. So what are we talking about today? We're going into the Christmas season. So this is, you know, December the 18th is when this broadcast airs initially. So, and we're dealing on the cusp of Christmas, that we're a week out from Christmas 2018. And I know there are a lot of people out there, and parents in particular, that are looking for gifts and gift giving. And I know there's a lot of kids out there that are looking for, you know, gifts to be receiving. They're not, and so many of them are not interested in giving anything but a list of things that they want. But in still, they're in a giving mood, let's just say that. So the topic for today is my living in vain? And I want to spend some time, you know, really analyzing what living looks like. What it looks like to me, and when I'm just doing the research and the meditation and in preparation for this podcast, I needed to understand what living looked like to me. Because, and I can't be the only one that living looks like, or this look that, I can't be the only one that, whose living looks like this. So I looked at what it looks like to me. What does living look like? So right now, my youngest son is struggling with some issues with asthma. So right now, living for me is every 2 hours watching my clock, making sure that this kid is getting his treatments, and I'm testing his oxygen levels to make sure I understand how is he living. You know, that kind of adds a certain degree of suckage, especially when you're up all night around the clock trying to get some sleep for yourself, trying to make sure he gets an adequate amount of sleep, trying to make sure that the other boys are getting what they need, and trying to figure out from a parental standpoint, can I really go do the other things and, you know, follow through on the commitments and promises I've made to support other things and work other places, you know, though he's sick. That takes some balancing, that takes some juggling, that takes a lot of mental gymnastics, mental Olympics, as some of my friends just originally told me. as an example. That's a lot of thinking sometimes. And I know I'm not the only caregiver out there. There's other caregivers that are providing care for spouses, for other family members, parents. And it takes a lot of time and effort and thought and energy to figure out, what am I going to do next? How am I going to get there? Is this life that I'm living really worth it? I had a conversation with a friend a few days ago about, you know, just life in general. And they were, you know, sharing with me how they were dissatisfied with where they were in life. And had it been 8 years of struggling financially in the same position, they felt like they were in the same spot, and some other changes had taken place in their life and they weren't really excited about it. And I could hear the frustration in their voice and in the tenor and in the text. And I get it. There's a lot of pressure we allow ourselves to feel. There's a lot of pressure that the enemy likes to apply, especially during a marketing season. Christmas is a marketing season. Christmas is probably one of the highest marketing seasons out there, because we're playing on our cultures, on U.S. American society, their view of what Christmas really is versus what Christmas should be. We're spending so much time teaching our children that Christmas is about the gifts. It's about Santa Claus. It's about the presents he brought down the chimney on his sleigh and you know, pulled by his reindeer, and talking about the selfish nature of what we can get. So we're battling with that as parents and making sure that, hey, when their friends call, man, what do the kids say on the phone about what they got for Christmas? Did they tell their friends what they got? Do they tell their friends they got the latest toy, the latest game, and, you know, are they getting the DLC packs for Fortnite and their other games? They're playing Overwatch. And shouts out to my kids who are some big Overwatch and Fortnite players. Well, probably Fortnite to Overwatch probably outrated about three times as many Fortnite players as Overwatch players. But if you're a parent of a gamer or gamers, in my case, yeah, there's a lot of pressure that the kids sometimes want to apply, asking for this and asking for game systems. And I remember, yet and still, another story recently, very recently, another parent talking about, oh, my son has a PS3 and I'm hoping to be able to get him a PS4 for Christmas. And that's wonderful, you know, when you have the means, the right prioritized means to get things for our kids and provide an extra measure of tangible view of your love. But when we're doing that as parents in lieu of other things, like in lieu of paying the light bill, in lieu of paying the gas bill, instead of paying a car note, instead of getting the car repaired, instead of buying food, instead of paying rent or paying the mortgage or some other credit card, or we go get a credit card or two and max them out and pay them off by the time summer comes, or the following Christmas, you pay that off from last year. And I remember doing that. My late wife and I, we played that game a couple times where we'd manufactured some money that we really didn't have. We pulled Rob from Peter to pay Paul, and I don't think Peter ever got what he wanted because we were always robbing from Peter. So I don't know who Peter was. I don't know where Peter got all his money, or possibly I think what ended up happening is I think Peter and Paul changed names quite often because I robbed from Peter to pay Paul, and sometimes that now Paul, I had to rob from Paul to pay Peter back. So I think that saying is a little twisted. But I've done that, been there. I'm not going to do that anymore. I already told my kids I'm not going to cancel Christmas, because Christmas and what it means from our family traditionally, from a traditional value that we've been trying to foster, it means everything to us. It means the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ, who came as the ransom or as the substitute or as the payment for our sins. So that's what we're celebrating, not the commercial value of, you know, gifts, toys, clothes. Side note, as a kid, I hated getting clothes as a present. I don't do that to my kids. If I get my kids something for Christmas, I'm going to get them something that they want. And I'm not going to waste my time buying them something that I think they need. Because if I'm going to buy something that I think my kids need, I'll buy that throughout the year. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'll buy that on another day. Or if I'm going to buy it, I'm not going to spend time, depending on how you look at it, wrapping it up, because they're going to think there's a surprise inside of something that they really want versus, hey, there's something in there that I really can't stand. I don't not like a pair of jeans or a sweater or pajamas or socks or whatever it is in there. But as a kid, 10, 12, or 5, 6, 7, I don't think any of them on their Christmas wish list put, ooh, mom, dad, I need to have that new bathrobe. Yeah, I need those new fuzzy socks and slippers. Well, now, I could be wrong, because on some of the new gaming sites, I've been to GameStop here recently, and they had these, I think they were Fortnite-looking boots that were slippers. So I think some of them would pretty probably want that. They may ask for those. Those are, I think, $35 or $40 just for some slippers. And we're not having that. We're just going to put on another pair of socks at my house. Sorry, I'm sure there's someone that can get a witness to that one. But I want to make sure, as we're going through and rambling through here about what life looks like, we make sure that we understand what our life is really truly looking like. Is it gift giving this time of the year? But for some who don't have kids, some people may have lost a child or may have a child or two that are in a hospital. I know a lady that we serve with at church, her son is in the hospital battling, and we're praying for him and for that family. For some of us that have been through some things, or are going through some things and coming out from some things, we're not really sure what living really looks like. It could be just breathing could be living for us. It could be, and for those of us who've lost a loved one or the ability to have a romantic love, loving, maybe that looks like living to us. And are we really pursuing our dreams the way we truly say that we are? Maybe are we really pursuing the thing wholeheartedly that we said that we want? Some of us want to, you know, do certain things, be an athlete, be a writer, be a journalist, be a graphic designer, an artist. A lot of us are talking a good game, but we're not doing anything to even get into the game. And that's something we really got to be mindful of, got to be really careful of as we're going, because a lot of us are watching social media, whether it be on YouTube, in addition to social media, or, you know, links from YouTube or people's Instagram. I know that's the most popular social media platform, as I can tell, with the millennial generation right now. If you're watching people's Instagram feeds and videos and their live feeds, there's a lot of imagery out there that makes people believe that they're really living this life. And I'm hoping that some of us really, really are living our best life now. But there's some places and people out there that aren't living truly. A lot of us are living fraudulently. We're living a lie because we're on the outside. We have the smile and the Instagram, timelines and posts are things that we're excited about. But inside, we're crying and sad. When we come right back from our break, we're going to talk about this more. Is our living in vain?
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
Does your business need to rank higher on the Google search engine? Do you want everything that your company touches to turn to gold? If you've answered yes to either of those questions, you need to contact Bright Media House. Generating relevant customer leads is critical to increasing sales and growing your business. By figuring out which online sales and social media marketing channel to use and how to use them can be overwhelming, especially when you have a business to run. Digital marketing is something every business owner and marketing manager needs as a part of their strategy. For more information, go to www.brightmediahouse.com or email us at info@brightmediahouse.com. And welcome back to the Raising Men Show. And again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle, and we're talking today about, from the topic, is my living in vain? And closing out the first segment, I was really dealing with the fact of what does living really look like for so many of us? Are we really living the lives that we see, or what we're posting on our social media feeds, or we're posting to our YouTube feeds? And I laugh because I've started to watch my kids' social media feeds quite often. And the only one of my kids who I don't have their feed on excuse me, is my oldest, but he's kid's 23. So, hey, excuse me, not a kid. That young man is 23 years old. So he's a grown man doing grown man things. So I don't need to, you know, watch his feed as closely as my other kids. You're a grown man paying your own bills, living on your own, doing your own thing. You need to be able to do. And I didn't always trust or need to trust that the Lord is doing what he called, you know, he was being called to do. And I love that kid because he's been such an inspiration for me since I've known him. When I met him was since he was 5 years old. And I got to say, that young man's living. He is definitely, definitely living. But how are the rest of us living? What are we doing? What are we not doing? What are we holding ourselves back from? I find myself in that spot. So the examples I'm giving is, what am I doing with my life? Since my wife passed away 6 years ago, or will be 6 years ago this coming February 2019, and I don't try to count the number or remember that, oh my goodness, you know, here's another year go by, oh, woe is me. I've done that for so many years, and I've really turned myself into being just the caregiver for my kids because I was no longer the caregiver for my ailing wife or for my wife in general, because I was a caregiver or am a caregiver by nature. But what I find that I have not been doing, and I think a lot of caregivers suffer from the same ailment or malady, is that we don't care for ourselves internally at all, or even externally. Yeah, when I say externally, we should be getting up and washing and putting on deodorant and, you know, combing our hair, cutting our hair, and looking presentable, you know, wearing clothes that are clean. And so it is a part of that. But are we doing the things to recharge ourselves, even if we do have commitments? Because there's certain commitments to provide care that we just can't get around. You know, so I have 4 young kids that live in my house. Well, probably 2 young kids and 2 younger kids that live in my house. Can they take care of themselves? Yeah, I could leave them probably a strong 2 days by themselves without me really becoming concerned with what's going next. Now, I have to do my part as a parent, though, and provide, you know, food that, you know, either is a warm-up or even cooked in assigning providing safe, age-appropriate meal preparation planning. That's something that they should do, can do, even if they're distracted. You know, what could the impact be at worst case scenario should something go wrong? Okay, so that's fine. I know what they can do. But when you look at your life, what are we really doing? How are you really living? Are we breathing? Are we dealing with our lack after a loss? Some of us have lost jobs, cars, houses, places that they stayed. You know, okay, yeah, some people are dealing through eviction right now. It's unfortunate for this side of the year, this time of the year. It's unfortunate for any time of the year. But what are we living? Some of us are living on somebody else's blessings, someone else's coattails. Some of us are just living vicariously through other people. And that's one thing, too. I was talking to a really good friend of mine. He's a marketing expert. And in being an influencer in his line of work, in his area, I watched him talk about what social media is doing and not doing and the trends. And we were talking about how even to market our show and how we're talking about our life and that this new millennial generation is really into a becoming more of a voyeuristic generation where, and I'm not, it's not even relegated to just millennials because a lot of the millennials are, excuse me, are actually out there doing something. It's the generations that are above the millennials, that my generation and the baby boomers, that we're becoming voyeurs, and we're watching the lifestyle of other people. We're watching time go by and we're spending more time watching than we are participating. And whatever we're watching, we have to be mindful of what that is, because some of the stuff we're watching is not good for us, whether it be content on TV, content on YouTube, or just the content on some of the social media feeds. It's just not good. I know some of us who've experienced losses of a variety of types, like I mentioned before. I know a lot of us like to jump to John 10:10, and we talk about where it speaks about living life and living it more abundantly. And you know, we stand on that a lot, because I know I have been, you know, guilty of using that scripture as the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Using that as the analogy as to why I may have lost a person or a relationship or a friend or something I've lost in my life. And I use the rest of John 10 saying that, you know, but he comes to give life and give it more abundantly. But understanding what does abundance look like in everyday life? What does abundance look like in my loss? And I began to become frustrated with that. Wondering, you know, I don't understand what abundant living looks like when I'm hurting, when I'm sad, when I've lost something. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to get the next meal or the next paycheck from, or the next dollar bill or 15 cents, whatever it takes to put fuel in my car, or, you know, money on my kid's meal account, or to get to the next job, to get the dollar, to get the meal, to do whatever, get clothes for the kids. And heaven forbid I buy something for them during this marketing season. What does abundance look like when my spouse is beating me? What does abundance look like when my child is an addict? What does abundance look like when I'm sitting in a hospital room at a spouse's bedside or a child's bedside? What does abundance look like when you've got a gravesite to go visit? I don't know where the abundance is in there. I can look at it as kind of an oxymoron, right? It's an abundance of pain. And who really wants that? I know I don't. I've had enough of it. When we're out in public, dealing with our pain, wearing our masks, I've often asked myself, you know, really, do we really tell the truth when, you know, when we're asked how we're doing, or when we ask anybody how we're doing? That's a part of living, right? I mean, how are you living? Because that used to be in line from a rap song. I think it was Heavy D or someone, I believe he says, how you living? How are we living? Living large, you know, and that used to be the catchphrase back, I don't think it was probably the 80s and the 90s, or 80s or the 90s. I go back a little farther. I'm sorry. I'm a music person. I'm an old school hip hop and R&B guy. So, yeah. How you living? How are we living? I'm trying to live John 10:10, but to live John 10:10, we've got to go and spend some time understanding what John 10:10 is really saying. We can't be one-sided about it. We can't take it out of the context in which the verses were actually created, the way the Bible's created. It's got to be applicable to us, how it was being applied back then. So when we ask someone how they're doing, or we're asked in response to that question, what are we saying? I know for many years, I'm really mindful of what I'm saying, because I've had my words in the past thrown back in my face, twisted, mangled around, and repurposed, repolished to fit someone else's purpose. So I'm real conscious of what I say. I'm real conscious of words used for clarity and understanding, for clear communication, so there's no misunderstanding as to what we're talking about or where we were. So when people used to ask me shortly after my wife died, and even up until now, people ask me, you know, hey, how you doing? My natural response is, well, how the heck do you think I'm doing? Especially shortly after Sandy died. I'm like, really? You would ask me that question? How am I doing? I just buried my wife. Well, in my case now, 6 years later, my wife's gone. My kids are growing and constantly in need of something to eat or to wear. How the heck do you think I'm doing? And so I have to tone my resentment down, because I had to really analyze most of the people I've met. Unless they're genuinely a part of my life regularly, or even some form of annualized regular, they really don't want to know how you're doing. And I don't owe them anything or anyone anything to tell them about my life as a person, as a casual passerby. Because if you stopped every person and responded to them truthfully how you were doing, most people's eyes would probably roll back on their head and glaze over. Like, you know what, partner, I didn't want to hear all that. I didn't really want to hear the fact that you can't pay rent or you're sad, because I got enough sadness in my own life. So often we just respond with, oh, I'm fine, but I'm not fine. Sometimes I need a hug. And that's a study we're going to break down at another show, another segment. It's a devotional I'm working on. The hug stands for a human who understands what I'm going through. Because on the outside, so often we have these pretty faces of smiles showing our pearly whites and say, oh, I'm fine, I'm blessed in the Lord, when truly on the inside we're crying on the inside. Or sometimes we're even reversing it, where we're pretending we're sad on the outside, when truly we're happy on the inside, because we're trying to pretend to be a certain way for somebody else's sake. I'm not sure why that would be the case, but there are people out there that do that as well. So we have to really look like what we're going through, and we don't look like what we've been through. That's a difference there. And that's thankfully how it is, because for me, I always know that age is but a number and a state of mind, but it's the mileage that you've been through that really puts the show and the wear on your body. How much we've actually done to and with ourselves. So we're talking about John 10:10. We're talking about abundance and abundantly and abundant living. And what does that really look like? And I need to go back and through and let's start to define what it's really looked like so we get some help. Because I'm trying to help me. So I know if I can help free myself, I'm sure there's somebody else out there who needs to be free just like me. So I looked up the definition of abundance, and it's a noun, of course, noun. If we go back to school days, children, and it's a person, a place, or thing. So a noun being a thing, in this case, abundance, it's a point of reference. And an abundance, it means an extremely plentiful or over-sufficient quantity or supply. An example here is abundance of grain, using an old school farming example. Overflowing fullness. In this case, you know, talking about overabundance of the heart, someone who's a really loving and caring person. Abundance has also been used towards to mean affluence or wealth. And the enjoyment of abundance, money, finance, homes, things that are associated with that. We have to be mindful then of what the definition of abundant is, and abundantly, because abundant is an adjective. It's a description of a situation or a description or describing term, right? So abundant means present in great quantity, more than adequate, over sufficient. As an example here is an abundant supply of water. Also means well supplied with something. Richly supplied, as in with resources, abundance in land and finances. Using old school ground example, of course, grain, as they used in the Bible days. But modern day time, we're looking for abundance. We're looking for tangible things. But we have to be mindful that abundance and abundant living, abundantly in this case, doesn't always mean tangible things, doesn't always mean finances. I used to get tripped up on that a lot. Lord, I live the life abundantly. I'm trying to live that dollar bill, Lord. I need to pay this bill. But sometimes it's the abundance of love we need to be worried about, health. We'll be right back from the break.
Experience uniquely crafted gifts, ranging from fragrant candles to artisan jewelry and more. Be the lucky swagbag winner of curated gifts donated by your community of artisan. I'm Shawneen Whitehead. I'm personally inviting you to experience festive Christmas shopping with friends. Join us every weekend through December 23rd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll be at Sears Shopping Center in Temecula Wine Country. To participate as a vendor or musical guest, contact Shawneen at helloamazingmarkets@hotmail.com. Have a Merry Christmas.
And welcome back to the Raise the Men Show. Again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle, and we're dealing from the topic of, is my living in vain? And I wanted to make sure that we really broke down that topic of being in vain, because I know I've been living in a way about how I've been thinking about my life incorrectly. So from a vain standpoint, vain meaning, is it worthless? If I'm living a life that's useless, am I living a life in a manner that doesn't make sense? So I had to make sure I spent a lot of time dealing with a popular verse that I used to run to, John 10:10. And let's read John 10. So the thief comes, okay, I want to start from in the King James first. I'm going to read the King James, the New Living, and the Passion Translation, because I want to give some true context around the words that we spoke earlier about. I'm a word guy. I believe in true meanings of the words. So we're going to go back and look at, you know, Greek and Hebrew, so I understand what those words meant at the moments when they were written. So John 10:10, coming from the King James, it says, the thief cometh, but not for to steal. Sorry, let's read it again. The thief cometh not, but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. And I am that they might have life, and they might have it more abundantly. King James trips me up quite often with the these and thous and haths and the cometh nots. Double negatives mean positive. So, something a little bit clearer for me to understand anyway. New Living Translation. The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Passion Translation. Same verse. A thief has only one thing in mind. He wants to steal, slaughter, and destroy. But I have come to give you everything in abundance, more than you can expect, life in its fullness until you overflow. And I was excited about that after I understood what the verses truly meant. And I started dealing with the word life. And because I was always so quick to jump to abundant because I'm like, okay, Lord, you're going to give me the stuff, right? You're going to, I lost my wife and my house and my cars and I didn't lose a car yet, but in job and people and places and God, but you're going to give it back, right? You're going to give it back and I get the stuff back. But then when I was doing the study today, the Lord was giving me the word life really stood out. It says, because I come that you might have life, King James, right? And have it more abundantly. Well, even in the New Living and the Passion, it talks about a satisfying life. A life that's overflowing in abundance. Okay, well, what is a life there? And when I really began to look at that term in the Greek and Hebrew, it dealt with the real and genuine life, active and vigorous, devoted to God, blessed in the proportion, even in this world, of those who put their trust in Christ. It doesn't speak about junk and stuff. It speaks about those who are devoted to God and Christ. And that's what this word here is meant and defined as. Not to say that God won't give us the desires of our heart. Like I've heard, we like to twist some of the scriptures to say, well, God will give you the desires of your heart. Well, you know what? Even that word desire there has nothing to do with stuff. It's not going to give you a Maserati because I really want a Maserati. I'm not going to give me a house because I really want a house. The desires in that verse meant occupational desires, the thing that your body wants to do and put their hands to from an occupation, from a work, go, do, career, entrepreneurial standpoint. When you get up in the morning, what are you thinking about doing and giving and serving with? That's that desire. So I had to really understand what was, really context here. And for some, I want to make sure you understand who the I is in the coming to give you something. Who was that I? So let's go back and read from verse 1 to 10. And I want to read it from the New Living Translation so we really understand the context here. And this is Jesus is teaching here and the disciples are there and there's various other people that are listening and watching and learning. And so from verse 1 of John 10 all the way to 10, it reads like this. I tell you the truth, anyone who sneaks over the wall of a sheepfold rather than going through the gate must surely be a thief and a robber. But the one who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him and leads them out. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them and they follow him because they know his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice. Those who heard Jesus use this illustration didn't understand what he meant. So he explained it to them. I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who come before me were thieves and robbers. But the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved, and they will come and go freely and find good pastures. The thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy. my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Okay, so now we understand what we're talking about a little bit. Let's make sure we all understand what we're talking about here. Jesus is talking about giving us life, caring for us, being involved in who we are, getting to know us. He spends time around us. He's guarding after us. He's watching after us. We're spending time with him. We understand what his voice is because we talk to him. He talks to us. We have a communication. We have a relationship that's, you know, one-to-one. And we understand what he's looking for. He understands how we are and what we're looking for. And he's able to guide and lead us. And that helps us with our abundance because as we come through him, everything that Jesus gives and provides us with, it's for our good. But sometimes, so often, we get stuck. I know I get stuck on the fact that if a tragedy comes, what happens when I'm in lack? And the Lord had to remind me that tragedy doesn't void our abundance. It propels us towards it. And I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, I get it because here's the thing. Had my late wife not died, I wouldn't be on the air right now. Had my wife not died, I never would have created the feature film Restored Me. There are people whose lives are being saved and impacted positively for the kingdom by that film, by this show, by the testimony and sorrow and pain of my family. Because I promise you, had my wife still been living, there would not have been a need to create either one of those things, the film or this show. Had my wife not passed away, would my kids and I not have the sense of urgency to live, to teach, to grow, to become who we're supposed to be? I don't think that would have taken place. And I don't want anybody to get misunderstood here that the thief came in and stole my wife. He didn't have the power to do that. The enemy does not have that kind of power to take someone's life. We can make decisions on our own because we are co-creators with Christ to take our own life by listening to and being influenced by the enemy. So if we give our influence over, like I talk about in the book that's coming, Catch My Breath, if we give influence over to the devil, then we can do all kind of variety of negative things. But if we give influence over to God, then the things of God take place, which is the abundance in living here. The abundance in communication, the abundance in love, the abundance in godliness, the abundance in faith and hope and peace and joy, and wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, the abundance of the fruit of the Spirit that the Lord speaks about. Those abundances. So, I don't want anybody to shout too soon on the whole thought of God giving us a long life, because that's what happens to me. I was listening to, you know, I spend a lot of time reading John 10:10, and I want to shout on just the, he's going to give it back to me. But when I have a tragedy, again, we have a loss. We need to understand what's going on. So where is loss dealt with as relates to John 10:10? Okay, so we go look up at Job. That's the person who, in his prime example of loss. Well, what happened to Job? They say, well, Job got back everything that was stolen from him and blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, have you gone to read Job? Have you spent any time in the book? I had to. When my wife died, I read Job chapter by chapter, line by line. So I need to understand, okay, God, what happened to Job? I needed to know. I didn't want to have any more problems in my mind that was changing how I was thinking that would keep me separated from God. I needed to deal with my own anger towards God. So while I was angry, I need to understand, okay, here's another guy in the Bible that was angry at God. How did he handle it? What was he doing? So Job 40 verse chapter 42 verse 10, it speaks about in 10 how when Job prayed for his friends, again, I'm reading from the New Living Translation, so we're in Job 42 and 10, chapter 42, verse 10. When Job prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes. In fact, the Lord gave him twice as much as before. Okay, so just reading 42:10, it's easy to jump back and go, oh, see, God gave him back everything. So some of us miss the fact of what the top of Job started with. It said when Job prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortune. In fact, the Lord gave him back twice as much as he had before. What was he praying for? Okay, so those who haven't read Job, you have to go back and spend some time with your study and read Job. And there's a couple of friends that came by to visit Job, and they were letting him know, hey, you know, because this is Old Testament time, so there was no Jesus as coming as a ransom for sin. There was no, you know, death of Christ. There was no, you know, blood sacrifice. So back in the Old Testament times, people believed that your sickness, your illness, your misfortune, your fortune or your health and everything was based on how you lived or something that some sin that you'd done to offend God, and he was angry with you. So Job's friends came to his house talking about, hey, you must have done something wrong to offend God, and you just need to curse God and die. And look at that, those, you know, look at your skin, look at you, you lost your family, you lost this, you lost that. And they never brought the truth before him. They never brought the fact that there was hope before him, because in the Old Testament time there was no hope, because there had been nothing to be hopeful for. So we don't live in the Old Testament. We live under grace. That was under the law, the Ten Commandments. That was back under, if you thou shalt and do, and if you didn't, there was nothing. But living under grace, we have to have an understanding now that the things that we have happen aren't something we're getting punished by. Now, the stuff that we do that we have to pay our own consequence for because it's our own actions. So I guess you could say, yeah, you can apply it loosely, but that's not God's way. He gave Jesus for us to be the ransom or the substitute for sin, but we still have to pay man what is man's and stuff we do wrong. And, you know, a rapist desires judgment, you know, needs judgment, and thieves would get punishment, and abusers will get the punishment they need. It may not be the measure we want, but it's coming for. All right, you're listening to the Raising Men Show. We're going into segment 4. We're going to deal with this more about, is my living in vain? I know this is freeing me. It's got to be freeing you too. We'll be right back.
This is Craig Carlisle, the host of the Raising Men Show, and I'm also an executive producer of the independent feature film Restored Me.
Something I didn't do. What type of God is gonna watch a man get up on his feet and then kick him right back down and get drugged through the dirt again?
It's a powerful, feel-good dramedy that centers around a young man trying to restore his relationship with his young daughter and her mother.
Talk to him just like you're talking to me.
Where have you been, kid? These people take communion from me. I am their God.
This film speaks to restoring your faith and pushes a bold message of positivity and motivation. The cast includes Gary Owen, Bill Duke, William Lee, Matt Gerald, Richard T. Jones, Malik Yobo, Yancey Arias, and Bo Casper Smart, just to name a few. Restored Me is available on over 100 digital markets, including iTunes, Amazon, and on demand from your local cable provider. Buy it, rent it, either way, I'm asking you to watch it. It'll bless your life.
And we're back to the Raising Men Show. Last segment, last 12 to 13 minutes of understanding of where we are, dealing with John 10:10, dealing with Job and 42, and we're going to go back and forth even farther back in Job so we can get some more understanding and really unpack the scriptures and make sure we understand what we're doing and how we're applying things. The topic, is my living in vain? How am I really spending my mind on life? On where I'm at and what I'm at and what I'm after, what I'm not after. And am I laying around just wishing and wanting, and old school used to say, pining away for something, which is wishing for something to happen without putting the work in. You can't wish and not work. You can't want and not work. I know the Bible speaks about, too, that a man who does not work, he doesn't eat. He's worse than an infidel, or which is also can be translated as a non-believer. We've got to put in the work towards whatever passion that drives you. And for some of us, we need to ask for the passion to be driven just to get out of bed, because sometimes we feel so weighted down, especially right now for people who say the holiday doldrums. Well, you know what? We need to find a passion for getting out of bed, a passion for washing ourselves, passion for dressing, passion for putting that smile genuinely on the outside of us, because we have so much to live for. I think I was just talking with a friend, and I'm trying to make an active effort in living more, in understanding why I was living and how I was living. I was living for other people. I was living for my kids. I was living to get through the day. I was living to survive and exist versus to thrive. And I want to thrive. And I can't thrive. None of us can thrive until we forgive people. And I know that's a tough thing. I know I had a conversation with another friend, and they were like, you know, you understand, you got to pray for and forgive some people who've done some things to you, who you're in direct conflict with, and who I'm harboring and holding some not so happy thoughts about, justified or not justified. And when you talk about how you feel and people say, oh, that's not true. Well, it's true to you because that's how you feel. That's how you perceive things. That's how you look. But you have to really spend some time with God and be honest with yourself in terms of where you are with how you're living and how you're perceiving things, especially in relationships that were negative with people. If you got some negative friends, negative people that are around you, negative family, you can't spend a lot of time around them. You can't let them into your space. You can't let them speak into your life and accept it. You can't let them transfer that negative, nasty spirit onto you, and that becomes a weight to bind you down. That's what was trying to happen here in Job. In the section where his friends came over to spend some time saying, hey, Job, you know what? I don't know what you've done wrong. You've done this. I'm sure you must have done that. And basically, you need to curse God and die. I don't know what you're doing with this stuff. And Job finally got enough, I don't know, manhood, husmah, whatever the proper term is. He had enough guts to speak up and speak for himself. And sometimes we need to do that. A lot of us take so much crap from people that we just think is justified from some false humility that I can't speak for myself because, you know, I don't want to have a fight. Because I used to be a non-confrontational person. Well, let me tell the truth. Back when I was younger, and I thought I had a lot of vim, vigor, and swag, you couldn't tell me nothing. I was excited. If you wanted to give me a piece of your mind, I gave you some change for that. And I spent my own money back to you. Our mom was like that. Lady had a fiery, quick tongue, quick wit. You know, she let you have it. Even when she didn't have it, she let you have it. Even when you didn't want it, she let you have it. And I got away from that. When my wife passed away, I dealt with a lot of loss and depression and fear and just downright gave in to the spirit of depression and oppression. So I let people speak into my life and who didn't come from any place other than their own selfish desire. Had no concept of what I was dealing with or not dealing with, wanting or didn't want. Spoke a lot of trash to me, spoke a lot of curses and used the power of the tongue as for death instead of speaking life to me. And there were some people who were speaking life, I get it. But since the fall of man dealing back in Genesis, right? We have that free will, and I was choosing to freely agree with the negatives. And a lot of us do that, especially during the holiday season when we're dealing with the loss and we're dealing with the negative. We're dealing with our own baggage. When you're dealing with baggage and hurt and hangups and loss, the day doesn't even look that bright. In fact, I was just on my other show, the Craig Carlisle Show, just Saturday with Dr. Michael Parker, and we were talking about when we go through our paths of life, and you know, he speaks about this. He uses the scripture, though, yea, that we walk through the valley of shadow of death, Psalm 23, of course. You know, some people dig a ditch there and we stay. And the Lord was giving me the example of just using that scripture. It's like, yeah, you know, Dr. Parker, that when sometimes we dig a ditch and dig a hole for ourselves, but yet we manage to not just dig the hole deeper, but we manage to cover ourselves back up in the hole as we're doing it. And I don't even know how that's even possible but I know we do it. And we allow folks to talk to us and speak to us any kind of way. So that's what was happening in Job in verses like, in chapters like 36 and 35 when his friends came over. Finally, though, in 37, Job finally spoke up. He asked some questions of God. He testified about the goodness of God. He spoke for himself. He didn't take what his friends were giving out. he finally stood up and said, "Nah, I'm tired of you giving me this crap. Bring this garbage to my door. Not taking it anymore." And then in chapter 38 of Job, from in fact four chapters worth, God rants and raves then about showing his friends and Job who he really was, what he had done and what he was about to do and already had created and not created. And he spent some time reminding those guys of who he was. And God even was basically, even told his friends, "Look, I'm calling you out. You two guys, call him by name. If Job doesn't pray for you, then I'm coming for you." Oh, I tell you, because I have some tough relationships. I'm sure we all have some tough relationships. Some tough relationships with people that you're close to, some people that you love dearly. Tough to deal with them. I don't know how often you all pray for people. I know I was very resistant. I'll bless you, you know, because again, we're supposed to pray for our enemies and bless those that despitefully use you. Yeah, I get it. I'm supposed to do that. I would do that. People often used to say back in the day that I'll forgive you, but I won't forget. I dealt with that also from my mom. Kind of got that upbringing. I'm trying to shake all that off because what the 38th chapter of Job to 42 reminded me is I can hold on to all the baggage and all the anger and all the resentment I want towards people. But it doesn't do anything good for me. It blocks the blessings of God because my heart's not right. My living is in vain at that point. So that's where we are. If we have issues with people, places, things, issues with God, that just keeps you twisted, upset, angry, mad, depressed, we've got to take that to God. We got to give all those to him because his word tells us that we can cast our cares on him because he cares for us. Because when we really look at what 42 and 10 says, when Job prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortune. In fact, the Lord gave him twice as much as he had before. And if we go back to John 10, it says that Jesus said, "I came that they might have life." I was stuck on the might, and I stopped there. I was like, "What do you mean, God? What do you mean might? That I might have life? Is there a possibility that I might not have it more abundantly?" Because it goes on to say that I might have life and might have it more abundantly. I'm like, "Whoa, wait a minute, might? That means there's a condition there. That means that I've got to be right in the eyes of God. I've got to be right before him. I don't have to be right before the people, because we're never going to be right before people. You know, never going to be right to everyone. So I've given up on that. If I'm right before God, then I'm free. I live strongly by the term, the scripture, obedience is better than sacrifice. So I'd rather be obedient to God than sacrifice my time, my pain, my thoughts, my whatever, my relationships with anyone. I need to be right before God. So I have got to repent and pray for people that I'm in tough relationships with, people who I've cut off because they've angered me, disappointed me, frustrated me, talk trash about me, use me, fully on taking advantage of me. So I wanted to make sure we really get this. So let's go back and read 42:10, and we're going to go all the way to 17 so we understand what's happening here. So when Job prayed for his friends, the Lord restored his fortunes. In fact, the Lord gave him twice as much as he had before. Verse 11. Then all his brothers, sisters, and former friends came and feasted with him in his home, and they consoled him and comforted him because of all the trials the Lord had brought against him. And each of them brought him a gift of money and a gold ring. So the Lord blessed Job in the second half of his life. Oh my God, that blesses me right now because I'm getting ready to turn 50, looking for this to be the second half of my life. So going on, so that the Lord blessed Job in the second half of his life even more than in the beginning.
For now he had 14,000 sheep and 6,000 camels, 1,000 teams of oxen. Teams, that's a plural. That's technically 2,000, or however we're meaning a team. It was at least two in a team. 1,000 female donkeys. He also gave Job 7 more sons, 3 more daughters. He named his first daughter Jemima, or Jemima, depending on how you pronounce it. The second Kaiza, and the third Karen Hapa. Not good with words, forgive me on that. In all the land, no women were as lovely as the daughters of Job, and their fortune, and their father put them in his will along with their brothers. Job lived 140 years after that. He lived 140 more years after that, living to see 4 generations of his children and grandchildren. That he died an old man, having lived a full life. That's what's for. That's the part we need to shout on right there. So, Lord, I bless everyone this day, and I forgive those people who have spoken negative into my life, spoken death into my life. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. Bless them, Lord, with favor, grace, peace, and mercy today. You're listening to the Raising Men Show. I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. Hope you've had a good time. Is my living in vain? That's been our topic today. Is your life being lived in vain? Something for you to think about. See you next time on the Raising Men Show.
It's been a long time.
Preach up. You got it.
I'm back. This is Craig Carlisle, the host of the Raising Men Show, and I'm back Tuesdays, 2 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific, right here on WKBY 1080 AM and WKBY1080.net. Tune in and we'll have real talk about real life.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
How do you avoid pitfalls that will disrupt your life? My office is very good with helping families protecting assets, building wealth, college flexible plans, tax-free retirement, and so much more. I am Jontrice Wells with World Financial Group, licensed to help million-dollar families, businesses, and everyone in between. You can contact me at 951-757-4202. Or email me at jw.nofamilyleftbehind@gmail.com. I'm about your family.